Hey, 1 Kings chapter 10, we're studying here in this chapter about the Queen of Sheba coming to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and this is also found in 2 Chronicles 9, so those are the two chapters that we're looking at here for this material, and just based on some of the stuff, or some of the passages we looked at last week and considered from God's Word. Was the Queen of Sheba unique in being someone of royalty from another nation that heard of Solomon and his wisdom and then came to hear of it? There is something unique from the fact that we have her singled out of all the other ones, and the fact that Christ, as we want to get to in a little bit, uses her for an example, certainly tells us there's something special about her and about the heart that she had and what she was seeking after. So there is something unique about her. The fact that she had heard of Solomon, that was not unique, because look how far away she was. And his fame spread abroad everywhere, so she wasn't the only one that heard about him and about his wisdom. And that's what was noised abroad about Solomon. It was the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord. That's what people heard about. It was Solomon, particularly in terms of his following of Jehovah and having the wisdom of God in him. So that's what people were talking about. At least that says there was some, as Brother Young was just praying, we need more good in our world. That is for sure. And the world's always full of wickedness. There are times that are worse than others and sometimes that are better than others. At least it seems like Solomon lived in a time where there were a few people around that actually valued even the idea of God and his wisdom, because that's what people talked about concerning him. You might even ask, if there was somebody reputed to have such wisdom today, how much attention would it get? I'm afraid it might not get a whole lot of attention. That's not what anybody seems to be concerned with these days. Now, wisdom and other things, wisdom to be wise and evil, yes, but God and his wisdom, there's not much value to that in our world today. It's actually what we're going to be talking about next hour, Lord willing, in our study. We have to consider the price of wisdom, and do we value it, and are we willing to pay the price for it? But she was, the Queen of Sheba was. But people were talking about this, so that's something good about that time to read about that. And there were others that came, as we saw last week in 1 Kings and chapter 4, verse 34. It says, there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth which had heard of his wisdom. Now, the fact that she was from such a long way away and made an arduous journey to get to Solomon to hear it and to see how much she valued that wisdom of God and was seeking after it is something that was special about her. But the noise or the fame of Solomon and having God's wisdom, that was being talked about far and wide. And we can see that the ones who heard about it, there were lots who came. She certainly is a special one. And in fact, as far as having details, she is the most special one of all of them that God tells us about. So let's go ahead and reread verses 1 through 3 here in 1 Kings chapter 10, and we'll refresh a little bit and try to move forward in our study. But let's see. Brother Peter, can you read that 1 Kings in chapter 10, verses 1 through 3?
When the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came proved in far questions, and she came to Jerusalem with a very great train, with camels that bear spices, and very much gold, and precious stones. When we when she, and then she was coming to Solomon, she communed with him all that was in her heart. And Solomon told her all her questions. That was not anything hid from the king, but she told her not.
All right, so having heard of this wisdom, she came all of this distance with bringing lots with her that she gave to Solomon, she came with hard questions. She didn't just come with presents. She came with hard questions to ask him, to test him, as it says in verse 1. So she had thought about things. So she wasn't just coming to hear it. She came with questions that she had pertaining to the wisdom of God, things that she wanted to know. And they weren't easy things. And she came with these very difficult questions to ask him. So, I mean, and there again, we're seeing the kind of heart that she had, that this is what she was thinking about and what she valued. So it wasn't just that she was coming to hear something. She wanted to hear these things as it related to what was in her own in her own mind and in her heart about what she was desiring to understand. And so she has these hard questions for him. And so then it says in verse 2 that when she came there to him, she communed with him of all that was in her heart. So there was a lot there. And she told him all that was there in her heart that she wanted to know about with all those hard questions. And verse 3 says that Solomon told her all her questions, all of them. And there was not anything hid from the king which he told her not. We ran out of time before we really got to explore that last statement there, verse 3. But we might expect it to say that there was anything hid from the queen which Solomon told her not. Well, of course, it transpired, since it wasn't hidden from the king, then it wasn't hidden from the queen that he was talking to. But the emphasis there is on the fact that it was not hidden from Solomon, so that he was able then to answer all of her questions. So that puts the attention on the ultimate source of this wisdom, not on the particular man that God had given this to Solomon. And we got to consider why last week. We reviewed why God did give this wisdom to Solomon, and that there are conditions for that wisdom. Again, we want to study about this some more next hour. This is a good subject to look at, and more than we can get to in any one class period or even one sermon, but these are things that we need to be thinking about all the time. In fact, we might remember Psalm 90 and verse 10 about our life. I mean, how many days do we have on this earth? We have but a few years. 70 by reason of strength, 80. I mean, 70 years, maybe 80. If you get a little past that even, but I mean, that's still the numbers that we're looking at today as far as people living on this earth. And not a long time was the point there, but then you get down into verse 12 in Psalm 90, and so we have a little time here. How do we spend it? What do we value in our little time here? Is this now the spirit of this world says, well, since we're only here a short time, well, you need to grab all you can get of this world, the short time that you're here. Get as much as you can, enjoy as much as you can. You know, you have your bucket list and be checking off all these things, to all of this fun and pleasure to seek after for the flesh, because you're here such a short time. I mean, that's not what the world says, and what the world says to do with that little time you got here. That's what the devil wants us to do, is to waste that little bit of time seeking after these things that aren't going to last. In contrast, what does God teach us to do? Since we know we're going to be here for a short time, we need to number our days We need to be very aware of how brief our life is and count that time, redeem that time, and apply our hearts to what? To wisdom. Now, does the Queen of Sheba seem like someone who was numbering her days and applying her heart to wisdom? Yes. And Solomon was that way. And so that's why Solomon, God bless Solomon with that wisdom. And that's also why that she's he's blessing her with that wisdom. But think about this. If she were not the sort that had a value for this wisdom, what would have been the best thing for Solomon to have done? What are we supposed to do with those who despise God's wisdom? Are we supposed to tell it all to them anyway? No, we're not. Did you have something on that, Brother Glenn? Well, no, and there's a reason why we shouldn't. I mean, what would be the response of someone who was a fool to being told the wisdom of God? How do they respond to that? Well, we have Proverbs chapter 23. In verse 9, and here's what God tells us to do with His wisdom in dealing with fools. Proverbs 23, verse 9, Brother Stephen. All right, so if we perceive that there's somebody foolish, is that somebody that we should be speaking God's wisdom to? No, and Jesus spoke about this in Matthew 7, in those first few verses of that chapter. He said about, what did he say about pearls and that which is holy? Cast not your pearls before swine, give not that which is holy to the dogs. Well, what would they do if we give those valuable things, the wisdom of God, to someone who is opposed to that? They will despise us, as we just read in Proverbs, but Jesus also said they will turn again and rend you. That's the world that we live in, sadly. Most folks, we are better off not giving any of the wisdom of God to them. Now, if it turns out there's somebody who is sincerely seeking, we perceive that like this Queen of Sheba. Well, that's why 1 Peter 3:15 tells us to be ready always to give an answer to those who ask a reason of the hope that is in us. Now, if they're asking a reason, what is that hope that's in you, in a mocking, scornful way with a very clear disdain or despising of who we are and what we're doing and our belief in God, then should we give that answer that we're ready to give? No, that would be foolish then. And the Lord says, don't speak that wisdom in the ears of a fool. So, in this case, Solomon had that wisdom. She's asking the questions, but if she weren't seeking it, and seeking it sincerely, then should Solomon have answered all of her questions? That wouldn't have been wise on his part, but Solomon is obviously someone that God considered worthy of having that wisdom, and He gave it to him. And God also considers this Queen of Sheba worthy of receiving His wisdom, using Solomon to teach that to her. But it was not hidden from the king. And again, that emphasis is on the source. And where does wisdom come from? Proverbs 2, verse 6. I know you know the answer, Dave. You can say it or read it. Yes, it comes from God. Out of His mouth comes knowledge and understanding. I mean, that wisdom and knowledge and understanding are from God. He's the source of it. You can't get it anywhere else. Socrates, that ancient Greek philosopher, his philosophy was that all of that wisdom is within us, and it's just a matter of having it drawn out from what's already within all of us. And his method, the Socratic method, was questions designed to have somebody to pull that wisdom out of them. Well, Socrates is quite renowned as a philosopher, but when we consider his ideas on that, compared to what God says, what do we think about Socrates and that?
He said, foolishness is found in the heart of a child. So.
Socrates never grew up. Apparently, he didn't get enough spankings. and Jan's right. I mean, it's not that wisdom is not there within us. What are we born with? What is our natural state? We tend towards what? Foolishness, not wisdom. We have to overcome that. Socrates was wrong. This world is wrong. It comes from God. So we need to listen to the one who has it. It's within him, and we need to find what's within him and then have that become part of what's within us. We're created with the capacity for that. God has made us in his image, that if we have a heart and a mind and a soul, we have the capacity to understand righteousness and to be able to then walk in it. But is that our natural tendency without God being the one to work with us, to form us in that? No, I mean, our natural tendency is to foolishness and wickedness. So we have to turn ourselves to seek after our Creator. And that's what Solomon did, and that's what this Queen of Sheba is doing. So that they're excellent examples in that. But God did not hide this from Solomon. If God, and here's the point, when she's asking all these questions, and if Solomon is puffed up, and would there have been temptation for him to have been puffed up about the wisdom that he had? All these people coming to him to hear it, how tempting would that be for him to think, I'm great stuff here, and look at how wonderful I am. And if he had become like that, knowledge puffs up, charity edifies, 1 Corinthians 8:1. I mean, we can get puffed up with what we have. That's something we need to be aware of and work very hard against. But Solomon obviously was doing well in battling against that temptation, but that would have been strong with all those people coming to hear that, for him to have been thinking that he was really, that he was the one, or he was the source himself. But had he been like that, what would have likely happened when she started asking all those questions? Without God, what would have Solomon been able to do here? He wouldn't have been able to do anything. Are we impressed with him, or are we impressed with God? We need to be impressed with God. I mean, he's the one giving Solomon all of this, and so he didn't hide it from Solomon. That's why he was able to answer the question, not because Solomon was so wonderful in and of himself. It was because the part that was good in Solomon is that he sought that and valued that. David taught him to, God blessed him with that because of that. That was the good part of Solomon, but the impressive part of the wisdom itself, and I mean, that's God, and he's the one that gave it to Solomon, and he's the one that gave it here at this moment. That also tells us, even though Solomon had been given a lot of wisdom, when God gave it, did he lose control of it? Is that the way it works? When God gives somebody something, does that mean he's given up control over it? It's now all yours or somebody else's? That's not the way it works. God can turn it on. Can God turn it off? He can give. Can he take away? Job knew that. And this is certainly implied in that statement there. I mean, God could have made Solomon, he could have hidden it from him right at that moment, even though he'd given him all that before. He could have shut the door on that right there, but he didn't. Now, do we have examples of when God has done that? Was Joshua a wise man? One of the wisest that we have, that we know about. One of the great examples of the Bible. He was a righteous man, sought the Lord, and God gave him that position as the leader of Israel and their second judge after Moses. The one that he used to lead them in to conquer Canaan and to fulfill all those promises he made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Was Joshua, for God to use Joshua to do that particular work in the way that he did God consider Joshua to be important? Obviously so. And gave him as one of the great examples that we have of righteousness. I mean, he's the one that we remember very well saying, choose you this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That was Joshua. Well, Joshua had much wisdom to do that. Yet, we know when Joshua didn't, in a moment, when Joshua did not remember to ask the Lord, and isn't that one of those conditions to have God's wisdom? That we lift up our voice and that we cry after it. What does that mean? One time that we cry after it, then God gives it to us, and then we're done with the crying. That's the good kind of crying. No, that's not the way it works. I mean, that process, how often do we need to be asking? And when we're in a situation and we have something that we're facing, do we just rely on what we think we have, or do we ask God in that moment, help me, Lord, give me good words, give me wisdom to know what to do here or know what to say here? Should we be doing that? Well, here's an example on the negative side with a wise man, an otherwise very wise and righteous man, Joshua, in Joshua chapter 9. This is when those people from Gibeon came all dressed in shabby clothes, and they had their rotten bags with their water containers and all of that to feign that they had been on a very, like they'd been on a journey like the Queen of Sheba had taken. So they wanted him to think that they lived far away, and that they had, I mean, really, they were pretending to do what the Queen of Sheba was doing. That they had heard of God and they had come this long distance to learn about it. But of course, in their case, they were from right next door, and they'd come up with this idea, this plan to try to deceive Joshua and the Israelites so that they wouldn't be destroyed like the people from Jericho and Ai had just been. From that standpoint, this kind of reminds you of, or at least me, of Luke 16 with the unrighteous steward. These people were were using a form of wisdom here to preserve their lives. We can't justify this lying and deception that they used, but you can look at least that there's an example of some children of this world that were using some wisdom, at least recognizing, well, look what just happened to Jericho and Ai. What's going to happen to us? And they knew well enough that it was because of God. They were correct in that they knew that they weren't going to be able to defeat them. The response the other neighbors have right after this chapter is you get five kings of the Amorites that band together and think, okay, all of us together, we can defeat them, and we better do this lest there be others like Gibeon, like these people from Gibeon, and then have one by one each of these little cities turn and give up to the Israelites. So they still tried to fight it. So those ones in chapter 10, that's when the sun and moon stood still and they got hailstones from God that killed more than the swords of the Israelites. they didn't understand. They didn't understand this was of God, and it was futile for them to try to fight. But did the people from Gibeon at least recognize that? This is God. We can't win. Well, they did understand that. So they came up with this ruse to try to deceive Joshua. Now, God had told the Israelites not to make any league with any of the people of the land. And that's what they were after. And sadly, they did that. And Joshua and the elders of Israel made a league with them here in this case. And the question is, what happened, and why did they make the league with them, and where did they go wrong to do so? Well, that we can read here in Joshua chapter 9, and see what happened here, and how this came about. And it has to do with the fact that Joshua and the Israelites in this case, they didn't ask of God. And God didn't bless them. All right, let's read a little bit from Joshua chapter 9 in this example. Verses 14 and 15. Joshua 9, 14 and 15. Let's see, Brother Glenn.
And the men took of their fiddles and asked not him about the mouth of the Lord. Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them to let them live. And the princes of the congregation swear unto them.
Question. Based on what it says in verse 14, had Joshua asked counsel of the Lord in that situation, would God have revealed who those people were and what they were doing to deceive them? I mean, that's implied in the statement in verse 14. The reason they were deceived is because they didn't ask counsel of the Lord. If they had, they wouldn't have been. I mean, God obviously knew who they were and where they were from. That wasn't hidden from God. Would he have been willing to let Joshua know what was going on if he'd asked? So here was a situation where was there wisdom hidden from Joshua in this matter? There was, because he didn't ask in that case. Now, were there other cases? Was the pattern in Joshua's life to ask? Yeah. But here was a case where he didn't, and he didn't get it. And there was one more. Actually, this was the second one. The first notable one was in the Battle of Ai, after Achan had taken from the accursed things from Jericho, which God had forbidden in Joshua 6, when Jericho fell, and Achan took of those things that were the spoil that was supposed to be for God and him only, and not any for the people. This was the first fruits of Canaan. First fruits always went to God, and the spoil of all the other cities went to the Israelites thereafter. But Joshua, Jericho, God said that was for him, and it was a curse to the people to have any of that. But Achan took of those things, and so he defiled the camp of Israel. So when they went to fight against Ai, God wasn't with them because of that sin that was present in their midst. Did God know what the situation was? Yes. Did Joshua, here was this little town, after having defeated mighty Jericho, here was this little town of Ai. And Joshua even disbanded most of the army, at least as far as fighting in this battle, and only took a little, because he thought they wouldn't need much to go defeat this little place. And they went against it and were defeated. And then Joshua was dismayed about it, and then went to the Lord after the battle, and then God told him what was going on, what the problem was. Well, what does that tell us? That's in Joshua 7. What does that tell us that Joshua didn't do? He didn't ask beforehand, because after that, then Joshua asked the Lord, how do we go about this battle? God gives the specific plan, they follow it, and they defeat Ai the second time, after they've gotten rid of Achan. It tells you that in that case, Joshua was not really thinking that was such a big deal, and he neglected to ask the Lord in that case. And God hid it from him, and he found out the hard way. So that happened two times that we're told about with Joshua. We're not told of any other times like that the rest of Joshua's days. If there were any others, we're not told about them. But everything else, Joshua, that we know of, Joshua remembered to seek the Lord. But we have a couple of cases with an otherwise very wise man where the Lord hid something from him because he didn't ask. Well, what are the conditions for us to find? We have to seek to find, don't we? Don't we have to ask in order to receive? Don't we have to knock in order for the door to be open? We have to seek, ask, and knock. James 4 verse 2 says, "You ask not, you receive not, because you ask not." Well, that happened to Joshua. We can see that didn't happen to Solomon here with the Queen of Sheba, but it could have. It very well could have if he had not asked the Lord. Now, we can read about another case where a man was in a sticky situation, and we're told about him asking the Lord, and the Lord blessed him. And this is a good one to remember on the positive side. In Nehemiah chapter 2, when Nehemiah was before the king Artaxerxes, and Nehemiah was of sad countenance because he had received a report from the Israelites about their vulnerability to their enemies, the ones that were in Jerusalem. The captives had returned there, but the walls were still broken down. The walls that Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians had broken down going on 100 years before now. And they hadn't been repaired, and so they were very vulnerable. Their enemies were pressing upon them, and Nehemiah received that report, and he was very concerned, very sad to hear that news. And he's the king's cupbearer, and if you're a sad sack in front of the king and that irritates him, then he could respond by saying, "I don't want to see you anymore, you're done," and not just get fired. Well, what did Pharaoh do? You remember the butler and the baker? What happened to the baker? What's that? Yeah, and well, the butler and the baker were, and they were in prison because the king was unhappy with them. But one of them, the Lord restored the butler, but the baker. Dave's got it right. He lost his life. I mean, that's one of the problems of the monarchy, isn't it? I mean, if you incur the disfavor of the monarch, what can the penalty be? Yeah, death. It can be instant death. I mean, that's the point here. I mean, Nehemiah, the king perceives that he's sad, and if that really disturbed him enough, he could have just said, "I can find another cupbearer. You're dead." And that would have been it. I mean, so his life, this was a life and death situation for Nehemiah. And the king asked him, "Okay, what do you, you're not happy, what are you requesting? What are you asking for me?" And verse 4 tells us what Nehemiah did in response to that question from King Artaxerxes. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 4, Brother Tom.
"Then the king said unto me, 'For what dost thou make request?' So I prayed to the God of heaven."
In the very next words in verse 5, "And I said to the king." So he was asked a question, he answered the king's question, but what occurred in between the question and the answer? Prayer. Now, do you think that Nehemiah said, "Hang on there, king, give me about 30 minutes to go pray about this"? There's some times where we might be able to take 30 minutes to pray about something. There are other times where we might need about 3 nanoseconds. But, I mean, do you think this was a... What do you think the chances are Artaxerxes even recognized that Nehemiah prayed? But he did. That's the thing. Did it have to be long, loud, and noticeable and all that? But before he spoke, this was a very key point. He needed the Lord's favor before the king so he would live. And he also needed the Lord to give him favor before the king to grant the request. And so very quickly in that moment before he speaks a word, he's asking the Lord for his help in that situation. Now, let's say he had neglected to have done that. What could the consequence have been? Of course, the Lord put Nehemiah in that position. He already had him there. So, I mean, the Lord knows the hearts of these examples that we read about, these righteous ones. I mean, God has them where they are for a reason. This would be obviously in accordance with or in keeping with the pattern of Nehemiah and the kind of heart that he had and his love for God. But we see the example of it there. So when we're in a situation in life and we're before we answer, before we take a step, I mean, we need to ask the Lord's help. If we don't, we may not get it. But if we do, the Lord is there ready to be with us and give us what we need. So we need to seek, we need to ask, we need to knock. And all of that happened, we can see in the case with Solomon and the Queen of Sheba. God didn't hide from Solomon anything here, which he could have done. So Solomon was seeking the Lord. He was asking and knocking, and now here comes somebody else seeking and asking and knocking. And so God's blessing both of them with his wisdom because they are pleasing him in the way that which they are seeking. So he didn't hide that from Solomon or from the Queen of Sheba. Okay, let's look forward here back in 1 Kings chapter 10. And we'll see her response to having heard all this. Verses 4 and 5. Let's see. Stephen Reinhardt, would you read 1 Kings 10, 4 and 5?
I'm going to finish you, but had seen all Solomon's wisdom and the house that he had built, and the meat of his table, and the sitting of his servants, and the attendants of his ministers, and their bureau, and his cupbearers, and his ancients by which he went up unto the house of the Lord. There was no more spirit in her.
I mean, she... How amazed was she at what she was hearing and seeing? I mean, she was essentially overwhelmed by it all when she saw it and heard it. So she saw Solomon's wisdom, the house that he built, his food, I mean, the servants, and everything about his kingdom and the way everything functioned, the way it was ordered. The way that he went up to the house of the Lord, all of that. She got to behold all of it. She was very overwhelmed by what she saw and to the point where it says there was no more spirit in her. And so then she's going to give her words to King Solomon based upon what she saw and heard at this time. Verses 6 through 9, Brother Ted.
And she said to the king, "It was true reported that I heard all that and thy act of thy wisdom. Howbeit, I believed not the words until I came in my eyes. I seen it, and behold, the half was not told me thy wisdom and prosperity of secret, the flame which I heard. Happy are the men that are these thou. The servant will stand attend before thee, and that hear thy wisdom."
And verse 9.
"Blessed be the Lord thy God, which delight in thee to set thee on the throne of Israel, because the Lord loved Israel forever. Therefore made he thee king to do judgment and justice."
Well, you can see the faith and the understanding that this woman had in these words here. Well, first of all, she said everything that she had heard about him was true. So there had not been any exaggeration of Solomon's wisdom and his acts from what she had heard. In fact, it was the other way. She said she hadn't even been told half of it. So it was undersold as far as what had reached her ears about him. So when she came and saw it herself, she saw it was far greater than anything that she had even heard in the report about it. And having heard the words, I mean, that she was willing to make this journey based on what she heard about it. She hadn't seen anything yet herself, but look how far she was willing to go to hear just based on really that possibility that the wisdom of God was present in this person, and that she could learn of more of God and His wisdom. To make such a journey based on even just that hope of it without having seen it. And she said she couldn't believe it until she had come to hear it and see that for herself. And so she said that the ones who were there, well, here she was blessed in coming there on this one trip. But what about the ones who were around, that were around him all the time? In verse 8, including his own servants. Now, how many people would want to be anybody's servant? But here she's speaking about the fact that these ones that were Solomon's servants, they were in a very unique position. They were around this man all the time. I mean, they were the ones around him more than anybody. The ones waiting on him continually, his servants. And so she singles them out. The ones that are right there by him all the time to be hearing him and seeing him, they were particularly blessed. So how often do we consider that someone's servant would be the most blessed? But that's what she's saying. She comes all this way to hear all of this, and then she turns and says, your servants, the ones that are around you all the time, are really blessed. But then she turns to the source. It's not Solomon. She said, blessed be the Lord thy God. She gives him the credit because she knows it's him. And she's speaking of and using Yahweh, that term Jehovah. She knows who the God of heaven is. And she's acknowledging him, that he was the one that put Solomon on the throne, that he's the one that's given him all of this wisdom, that he's the one that's made him everything that he is. So she's crediting God with all of that. And that shows the kind of understanding that she had. So this is a woman that is being blessed by God because of the heart that she had in seeking him. And we can see that as she is seeking, she has found. Well, we're out of time this morning. We haven't made it to the end of chapter 10. We're about a third of the way there, but Lord willing, we'll continue some more with this next Lord's Day, or I guess it'll be the one after, right, Jan? We have our foundations class next week, Lord willing. So we'll put this aside for a couple weeks and get back to 1 Kings 10 and 2 Chronicles 9, Lord willing, at that time.